It's time for the SLMA Radio Hour, the only show that takes a look at sales lead management from a different perspective, with your host, the founder of the SLMA, master sales lead practitioner. He's laughing. James Obermeyer. Hey, welcome, James.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Aren't you a master practitioner?
I used to be, but now I just look at other master practitioners.
Okay.
The title tonight is How to Choose a Telemarketing Service, the 2.0 Contact Center Model.
I hope she's going to give us some good stories, too, of people who did it wrong.
Deborah knows everything. She's really, she is really great tonight. We've got Deborah DaCosta on, and she promises to demystify the complex contact center business by finding the right company to partner with for sales and marketing, lead gen, qualification, sales programs, etc. So she's really got it nailed, and she's got a great outline for us tonight. She's going to reveal some of the kind of the backroom secrets of our programming when it comes to finding a good service. Now, a little bit about Deborah. She founded Direct Marketing Partners in 1991. She passionately believes in the goal of creating an effective marketing company truly responsive to the individual needs of clients. To this end, she structured DMP so that the company would be large enough to have the depth of expertise required by corporations with worldwide interests, but of a size that would permit close project participation by all the firm's senior staff, as well as flexibility, scalability, customization, etc. For two decades, she's helped shift the lead generation model from quantity to quality and market-ready to sales-ready. She's done this by leading a team that stays ahead of the technology curve. Deborah, are you there?
I am here.
Well, that was a long introduction, but you guys deserve it. You've done a great job for me personally in several different clients, and one I know is still using you for two or three full-time equivalents, just about, I think. And so even that was several years ago, and I went lunch with the president of that company a couple of weeks ago, and about a month and a half ago, and he's really pleased with the continuing service. So call centers have really gotten into what you call a contact center. Could you explain a little bit more of your 2.0 concept to me?
Sure, absolutely. As most everybody knows, we've got a changing marketing and sales world. There's a new paradigm whereby the customer has grabbed control of the sales process. They do the research on their time schedule and can look things up on the web, and you just can't call into that prospect. You have to earn the right to really speak with them. They've got a lot of different ways of getting information. It's a multi-channel world. And at the same time, it's multi-channel. There are less and less resources in these big companies for marketing and demand generation and even sales. They cut back on their staffing. So that impacts the call centers as well. But the call center, I'm saying, is now a contact center in the B2B world. It's much more sophisticated with the multi-channel offerings. We're competing and working hand-in-hand with the internet, email, mobile, webinars, faxes. Everything is competing for attention and using a lot of resources. It's a contact center. You can't just work isolated on the phone. You've got to integrate these different touch points when talking about the complex sale, as I am. But even in other kinds of sales and more simple things, we know that people are getting information in other ways. So that's why we call it a contact center. We're also seeing that the CFOs of the companies, of our customer companies, are acutely aware of the benefit of consolidating the sales process expenses. And they're becoming some of the best and biggest advocates of outsourcing. They want to reduce their overhead and be able to scale without an increased headcount. The call center has to respond to that, and it may not only be with their telemarketing rep. It may be with a data processing person or some other person. So I'll give you an example of where later on about how that plays
okay.
In the contact center. Everything is metrics-based with a lot of accountability, and so you have to do your teleprospecting, telequalifying, all those things in the context of being able to show the metrics and prove what's happening. So it's no longer simple. It's no longer quantity, but rather qualifying and showing accountability.
Okay. Well, how does someone get into the identifying their goals and objectives? In other words, why would they use a call center? Is it just because I'm getting too many inquiries in, I can't follow up, I'm getting too many emails, there's nobody to answer them, I need somebody because we've let go some of our in-house staff and now we need to staff up and it's too expensive? But what are you seeing most common?
We certainly are seeing the surge in I'm getting too many inquiries and inbound responses to marketing automation and downloads, white paper downloads, emails, all that sort of thing, more than the company can handle. So there's a lot of, please take these off our hands, and we don't want to waste the efforts that have gone in the creative and marketing efforts that have gone into creating them. We need to have them qualified. But when someone realizes that they need a call center, I cannot emphasize enough how much they have to define the need, why they want the call center. And if it's to augment, that's one thing. If it's to replace their inside sales team, they have to consider a whole lot of other factors. If it's because somebody higher up in the company has said we need to augment or better qualify, that the leads aren't closing and we want to try another approach, then we as the company or any telemarketing company has to really work with them and uncover what the errors and mistakes were so that we don't repeat mistakes. So extremely important to understand the end game, what you want to get out of the call centers, so that the customer in the call center can craft a program that really meets the needs, hits the goals, etc.
So you could almost go in with a menu and say, okay, let's see, is it pre-sales? Is it telesales? Is it post-sales? Do you need technical customer support? In many companies, if you go in with a menu, I'm sure they could say, geez, we need a contact center for 2 out of 3 or 4 of those things.
That is true. Although we do find that they usually focus on one area, what I call sort of a first level, whether it's pre-sales or teleselling or post-sales or technical support. They're sort of within that area, but within that little area, it can get very complex. But you're right about, first and foremost, you have to sort of figure out what kind of telemarketing in these general 4 categories you want, what kind of a support center you want for that. Then you can start digging the next layer, and you look at maybe it's business to business versus business to consumer, or it's the complex versus simple sale, or it's industry specific where you have to have a specific knowledge base or a licensed person, something that then takes you to more focused kind of call center. Whether it's inbound or outbound, that's very important. Those are two very different animals, and you might find a really good company that can do your outbound but is not set up to handle the inbound the same way. Do you want me to go to another level?
Let's talk about the other. This is not your grandfather's or father's telemarketing service anymore, is it? It's really...
No. No, it certainly isn't. If you want to dig down another level, I'll call it a tertiary level,
yeah,
you can talk about whether you want to do a data cleansing, whether you want to collect the opt-ins as you're calling, whether this is cold versus warm calling. Do you have to hit specific service levels? If it's going to be an inbound center, you've got to have somebody that can pick it up in a certain amount of rings, respond within a certain amount of time. Is that going to be an important component? Because not all companies are set up to do that. Do you want to get just your leads, or do you need the whole database back with all the findings and all the extras, the things that are cleaned up? And then a really important area, and this, Jim, is something I'm sure that's going to be near and dear to your heart, would be the lead management handling. How does the contact center, call center integrate with what you're doing with your team? Do you want them to work in your tool? Do you want them to do hot transfers? Are you going to allow communication between your inside sales team and their team? How do you want your leads disseminated? Is it going to be on a portal that's available 24/7, or is it a report that once a week accompanied with a management meeting, with a conference call? Do you need to integrate with some marketing automation tools? For example, we have some customers that eventually want to integrate with our callware with their marketing automation tool, and then that in turn will be pushed into a Siebel system, which will go back into the marketing automation tool that will come to us scored that we call. I mean, it gets very complicated. And the customer needs to know ahead of time, of course, whether or not they're going to need this level of sophistication or integration. And not everybody's set up to do that or willing to do that.
But it doesn't end there, does it? There are other ancillary services, list development, email dissemination.
Okay,
I'm starting to get exasperated.
Absolutely.
So much.
Here's a whole other thing, and I would really like to address this because we're seeing so much more of this. Not only is the contact center expected to make the calls, invite people to webinars and audiences and make appointments and do leads, et cetera, but often the customer wants us to do list research and find the best list. They may want us to disseminate their emails for those multi-touch points. They may want us to advise and set them up with a marketing automation tool. They may want help with their creative content or battle cards. If they know that they're going against, sometimes we do what's called a takeout campaign, where they're going directly against their competition and we're maybe talking about a product announcement or going after someone else's customers. You've got to have those battle cards and know how to fight objections and how to position the product. And they may not have the inside staff to do that. And so they'll ask us for help with that. And that's when we call in a trusted partner to help with that. Another ancillary service would be maybe webinars, being able to help them do webinars. And we've got partners, not just we, but call center may
sure.
have partners who are positioned to do a bang-up job on that. And then finally, and probably the most important of those ancillary services, is the reporting. Sometimes it's reporting for call productivity to see how the things are going, how lists are working out. Okay, so there are two different kinds of reporting. One is on that call productivity, mm-hmm. how we're doing, how many calls per hour, how many completed scripts per hour, blah, blah, blah. And then there is the reporting on the lead disposition, how many are turning into leads, how many are in that follow-up or future opportunity category. And that needs to be tracked very, very carefully so that there are no surprises. In addition to that, in addition to what the contact center itself is creating, the kind of reporting that they have to do, some customers want us to integrate third-party other of their partners' information that comes back. Email opens, ring, there's a third-party 800 line number that can report on what kind of activity that's taken place on their 800 number. They want us to integrate that reporting and then maybe follow up on those leads. All sorts of things that are dragged into the reporting, which really helps customers understand, giving them insights into their sales cycles, what's working, what's not working.
Well, some of the clients that you've gotten me involved with, or I've gotten you involved with, or recommended, one of the things they've always been impressed with, and I know this program's not a commercial about you guys, but we might as well say it while we're here, is one, the quality of the people they've always been impressed with and their knowledge, that because they've run so many programs, and the longevity of the people there. But secondly, it's the reporting that seems to keep them there because they feel that their hours and the dollars they're spending is well spent. And sometimes they don't always like to see the results. Sometimes the lists are bad. Sometimes the leads don't convert. But they always know you're being honest because you deliver the good and the bad in the same report sometimes. And so it's, I've told some of the clients, I said, you know, they could fake these reports very easily. They could say some people are better, the call numbers are better. And these guys really tell you the way it is. It's quite interesting.
Along those lines, I just heard today from one of my project managers that on a client meeting, there was a report on a lead that was from 2 years ago, from 2011. It took 2 years to convert with an annual sale of $167,000. And if we weren't tracking, the customer wouldn't know that bit of information about the sales cycle, that sometimes it takes 2 years for these leads to come to fruition. That kind of reporting can give so much information, and that is true. What you say, that's what keeps customers, they get very, very attached to that reporting, and of course they keep complicating the reporting and making it more and more customized, which is something that you want to judge in your call center, whether or not they're willing to customize and do that sort of thing. But it can be so informative. Another trend one of our clients saw was that the EMEA sales percentage had gone down between this year and last year, that the lead conversion had gone down, but then when they started examining it, they had lost a rep. They realized that they weren't following up on certain leads. I mean, they're just very, very insightful. And so to undertake telemarketing, which, you know, doesn't come cheap, you need to have this kind of accountability, and the customer needs to pay attention so that they are getting the most out of their telemarketing. Mm. Other things are sales funnel ROI reporting. They might feed us the close, and then that gets put into our reports. Or they might feed us the matchbacks. We just did a huge trade show last summer, 50,000 people attending a trade conference, and we get the number of matchbacks of people that actually went ahead and did finalize their registrations and that reporting. I mean, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's ugly. As you say, at least they know.
You seem to set yourself apart on the reporting side, which I've used many, many services in the past. We're going to have a break in a few minutes, but before we get into the break, because after the break, I'd like to talk about pricing models and what people can expect. And I know this is not your pricing model. You being an expert in the industry can give us some ideas on what kind of pricing model someone will reach. But the overall business, a year or so ago, some of the contact centers out there were hurting for business and they were getting by, but have things improved substantially, stayed about the same, or do you think they're not as good as a year ago?
Oh, I think they're definitely as good as a year ago. And it comes in spurts. I would say things are better.
Good.
They're not fabulous. The whole change, I mean, there's so much more accountability within companies that has to trickle down to telemarketing and their marketing endeavors. But I think because of the marketing automation, what's coming from that, people are recognizing that they need to inject the human voice or the human touch into the process. So I think telemarketing is improving, and we're seeing some real converts. We're seeing some clients, they're going to double in January. One of our biggest customers has announced that they are going to give double the budgets, which are going to put them in almost in the six figures per month.
Well, we've been speaking with Deborah DaCosta, president of Direct Marketing Partners, this afternoon, and she's been filling us in on the difference between telemarketing and contact center and goals and objectives and all the huge number of items you have to look at when you really look at starting to bring on a contact center. And when we come back in a few moments, we're going to take a look at the pricing models and then hear a little bit more about Direct Marketing Partner Services. And to be fair, considering she's giving us all this great knowledge. Paul, can we hear from our sponsors?
And if you're visiting websites, why not go to the SLMA's website? Because you'll find statistics like this one. You've heard it before. But think about it. 5 to 20% of every company's marketing budget is consumed with really just two things: generating sales leads and then managing those sales inquiries. And yet, after all that effort, all that money, all that time and talent to do that, statistics tell us that only 10 to 25% of those precious leads are ever actually called or pursued by a company's sales channel. Shock? Well, if you'd been to the SLMA's website recently, you wouldn't be, because there's hundreds of similar articles, statistics, ideas, and bits of information covering both B2B and B2C, sales lead generation and management, tips, ideas, topics, statistics, you name it, it's probably there. So, if you'd like to learn more about either sales lead generation or sales lead management, why not check out the only organization that focuses on both, the Sales Lead Management Association. Learn more, simply visit the website at theslma.com. You can even sign up for a free membership. That's right. If you go there tonight, you can be a member tomorrow. Just type in theslma.com. Now back to Jim.
Tell us a little bit about the pricing models. How can you get value? How can you understand what you're getting? Because they're setup fees, hourly fees, management fees, reporting fees. Don't forget to go to the bathroom fees. There's all these fees.
Okay.
What's fair?
Well, it's interesting. I just made a note, 7 to 13 touches, and you said the same thing, so when you were talking about that. So I just want to say that when you talk about the human voice and how we get to talk with people, we're mandated to reach these people, and we're not just taking the cream off the top. We have to try really hard to reach these people. And sometimes it does take 7 to 13 touches, and the number of touches that the customer tells us they want us to make or the number of attempts is part of that pricing. And so if I haven't confused you enough with all these other things that I've mentioned, I'm just going to say that pricing, probably people's reluctance to talk about pricing for telemarketing is because it is and can be so complicated and there's so many factors to consider.
Nobody ever talks about pricing in this show. Jim asks the question every week and nobody gives us an answer.
Well, I nail them sometimes, though.
We're going there, but I just have to set the stage by saying there are a lot of things to consider. One of those is the number of attempts. Another one would be, is it cold calling versus warm calling? Because cold calling is going to be harder to reach, and you're going to have to account for the time that it'll take to maybe nurture those along. And so,
my customers are easy to reach, though. They're all, the lead, I'm always going to give you the best leads, and you can get them so easy.
So for the telemarketing company, we have to sort of crystal ball it and say, is this list going to yield, or is this going to be a good list to work on? We sometimes will ask for a sample of the list because there may not be any contact names. There may not be any phone numbers. There may not be this. There may not be that. So the list is very critical. So it's, and it's pretty hard to say.
But that's what you're there for. I'm just going to say, contact people who will buy my service. And it can't be that hard here, right?
Paul,
I'm being provocative here tonight. I'm sorry.
You certainly are. And so what I'm saying is the number of calls per hour, the number of completed scripts per hour is going to vary with every campaign, and we have to sort of guess that. That's why that discovery period in the beginning is so important. Mm-hmm. When the customer comes to us and we really explore what he or she needs to achieve, what we're working with, what kind of lists, what kind of targets, et cetera, we can begin to get our hands around, our arms wrapped around it and create an SOW that addresses this pricing. And there is, for our company and for a lot of people involved in the complex sale like this, there is no magic formula. Every single SOW is unique and takes time to put together.
Okay.
So let me tell you how the different models.
Okay.
And tell you how sort of ranges of things, what the customer needs to deal with when trying to figure out what it's going to cost, or and what the customer and the company needs to deal with. So you can look at it, you can price it hourly. You're going to go back to the goals. You're going to figure out maybe how many leads they need per month. You're going to reverse engineer it and have to figure out how many hours it's going to take of telemarketing to come up with a certain number of leads. And then you're going to look at all the associated, you're going to look at the department or the company behind that one telemarketer and figure out how much project management you're going to need, how much list and data management you're going to need, mm-hmm. how much reporting, and maybe how many of those ancillary services. And the setup. So depending on how complex this campaign is, your setup could vary from 1,500 to 4,500. Your telemarketing, depending on this level of sophistication, could go anywhere from $50 an hour to, in the telesales world, probably $100 an hour and upwards.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in it for lead gen, let's leave sales out of it. For lead gen, audience acquisition, things like that, audience acquisition being maybe at the lower end, unless it's very complicated and you're going after CEOs or you're going after something very specific or difficult, you could be talking $45, $50 an hour. And if it's lead gen, you can be going up to $65 an hour. Those are just general numbers, and they can go up or down. And also volume is going to then has to be taken into consideration. If you've got really good numbers, high number of volumes, many full-time equivalents, you could be discounting that price anywhere 10 to 30%.
Mm-hmm.
So there are going to be fluctuations based on volume. And then as your volumes increase, you're going to get economies of scale out of your program management, list management, reporting. But those, let me go through some of those prices.
Okay.
List management, we're looking at somewhere around $45 to $50 an hour. Reporting the same, somewhere around $50 an hour. If we're working in someone else's CRM or having to do some fancy database work, it can go up $75 an hour, $90 an hour to be working in specific marketing automation tools. The ancillary services, that's a whole nother bailiwick. List research could be $50 an hour. I mean, there are all sorts of different prices for list research, for webinars, for creative content, those numbers.
So many companies have a different hourly figure depending on the function.
Right, and on the level of skill, like mm-hmm. function, the skill level of your caller or of those other surround services that you're offering. another model. So that's model, that's by the hour, and it ties very closely. When we put a proposal together, you're going to see the metrics that you, that we aim to achieve. We're going to estimate the metrics, and we're pretty darn good at that, and we'll hit those pretty often. And if we don't, we're going to have discussions around that and tweak it. But then we're going to price it according to hitting those, trying to hit those metrics. And so we'll estimate how many telemarketing hours per month, et cetera, et cetera.
So you do some of this, you do some of this pricing by the task. What about by the job or bundled FTE, full-time equivalent?
All right. We are not so keen on doing it by the job. It basically breaks down the same way, but you may not see. The people that often do it by the job are also perhaps packaging it with some creative or email marketing or something else, and they might just throw the telemarketing all together. I would be careful with it when it's just bundled by the job. They should be able to break it down, go back to these different tasks that are involved in it. But some people are going to bundle it by the job. And it may be very fair. It's just that it's not explained.
So you've got to worry about the digital agency that wants to do all the email blasting and all of that, and then they're saying, yes, and we've got four telemarketers in the back of the room, and they can do all the calling for you.
I mean, thank you. I mean, that came from you, not me. But anyway, so that there are ways of getting telemarketing bundled by the job. Or if it's somebody who's doing maybe a very high point, a high sales job, and knows it's a big, long endeavor, it's just going to give you a number. And it may work out very well. It may be harder to define. The person can estimate it that way. And that's not my world, so I can't really address that really well. But certainly that is one way that people do it. Another model would be by the full-time equivalent. That's bundled, but it can be broken out. So you might be told that one full-time equivalent is going to cost you, you know, $8,000 or $10,000. You're getting everything with that per month. You're going to get program management, database management, reporting, the quality control, all the support services behind for the supervisor, monitoring, quality control. Sometimes there's recordings that may be taking place and being sent out. There's a lot of different surround activities, and they could be bundled. But ultimately, you can get the full-time equivalent. You can find out what the breakout is. And just so you all know, typically the lower numbers of a full-time equivalent, a certain amount, almost a third, there'll be a program management will account for almost a third of that number. There's a lot. And program management includes all those other kinds of supervisors and all those other
things. Yeah, well, you can't avoid it. You need the basics, and that becomes
absolutely
a smaller
also,
part of the invoice is the number of people goes up.
Right. And those meetings, the once-a-week meetings and all the other meetings that are going. So the full-time equivalent, you may be able to come up with a number, and you say, I want three, four, five, whatever. And the number goes down per full-time equivalent as you get to a certain volume. And that's when you start taking advantage of the economies of scale for your other surround services.
What about people who ask for a cost per lead? You necessarily, but is that a common way to also price it in the industry?
I would say it's not common. Here, I would truly say buyer beware. If you can find a company to do pay for performance or cost per lead, fresh right from the get-go. I think that model works when you have an established relationship, you've been doing the campaign, or you've been rolling this out for a period of time that you can really benchmark and feel confident in what you are committing to. And then you can figure out that it's going to take approximately this much per lead, and that can be anywhere. There are no limits there, but in our complex sale world of lead gen, it can be anywhere from $400 to $800 probably per lead, and goes upwards from there, I'm sure, and maybe downwards given some big, if you've got some big volumes. But it can be risky, but it can sometimes work for the long-standing client, and we're not adverse to doing it when we know what we're dealing with. But it takes, you have to really know. You have to know who you're dealing with, what product you're selling or dealing with. And you need to know that if you've got a very low cost per lead, chances are you're going to spend the money on the other end qualifying, requalifying, and if the price is too low, I would be very careful about that.
That is a way of doing it. I've got another question, because something you and I haven't really talked about in the past. Don't you love it when I spring these things on you?
But no.
That's what interviews are all about. There's always somebody who calls up and says, look, if you're really that confident in your services, then I'd like to, you know, I'll pay you $20 an hour, but if you get a sale out of it, I'll give you 5% of the sale. And I never like those programs. Those are people that wanted us to take a risk on the quality of their products and their brand name and on their position in the marketplace. And I didn't like those programs. Are they still out there? Do people really, do the services out there really buy off in this kind of revenue sharing? Does it work very often? I didn't like it, but does it work very often?
I think that there are some people that do. I don't know how long they stay in business, but there are probably some people that will buy off on that. The only time I can see an application for that with an upside is if you say, we think we can hit this metric. We think we can get you 12 leads per month, and we're going to do it for this price because we've been doing it for so long, we kind of know. And if we can exceed that, we expect this extra amount, which is the upside for us taking the risk for doing it in the first place.
Okay.
But it's, so the only time we would never do it as a very, very low cost and then, woo, we get a lead and we're going to make a lot of money. It's kind of for exceeding the metric.
All right.
So that we're never too low. Yeah.
What about...
Jim, do I have time to say one last type of program or pricing? And the last one that I want to mention is that you might find a trial price, a pricing to do a trial. I don't want to say a loss leader, but something that allows the customer to try it out. Part of the reason that we offer a trial is because nurturing is such an important component. And if a customer comes to us with a very, very small budget and wants to try, and we think that they're pretty serious about it, but they just can't afford to lose too much money, and we want them to see what it's like to experience a long-term project where you can space out the calling for when people are away, or, you know, you don't want to hit them too many times in a short period of time. We'll do a smaller program and spread it out over a longer period of time. And we differentiate between warm calling, because that doesn't take as much nurturing. They're already sort of interested. And we'll offer a warm calling kind of trial, or cold calling, and we'll spread it out over 3 months. You're still going to pay for 3 months.
Yeah.
It's done slightly differently and allows the customer to experience the fabulous benefits of injecting that human touch into the whole process.
Okay. What about people who invariably, there was always somebody that said, well, I'd like to pay your telemarketers $10 or $20 some spiffs.
An incentive, yes. I'm glad you brought that up. That also can be built into your program. We were initially very leery about BIFs, thinking that that's going to have them be overly optimistic about whether something's a lead or not or whatever, or they might play with the truth a little bit. But because there's so many processes in place now to verify and check, validate leads, including monitoring and recording and all that sort of stuff, and because call center people know that they have to be, things are spot on and there's a lot of quality control and that they won't laugh, they exaggerate anything or you know, aren't telling the truth, I think it is fair. And I think it's a good thing to do. And we have, for most programs, there is, if we can hit metrics, that there are little spiffs in place. And when it comes from the client, it's direct from the client or with involvement from the customer client, it's even better. Yes, the 20 or 25 per lead or for the person or the team that does the best, I think it's really useful.
And okay.
These people, they live on that. It means a lot to the telemarketers to get recognition and extra earnings because of that.
Okay.
And the recognition from the customer, you know, just the thank you letter, the t-shirts, the little company trinkets that are sent to them, they also really resonate with callers. So, yes, but that extra incentive or commission, not commission, the spiffs, very valuable.
Can I just pipe back in and say one thing? I know I'm just supposed to sit here silently most of the time.
No, you're pumped. You get in.
I just want to say, despite all the caveats, this has been the clearest, most understandable explanation of what is sounds like a pretty complex world of pricing here. I feel like I finally got it. Everybody else is always, well, it's from $1 to $1 million and call us, you know.
Thank you, Paul.
Well, I'm not going to get in trouble here for just
blasting
out prices and things, but I do think that it is confusing, and there's so many variables, but I did want to get it on the table because I just think it's important to do that, so... We're pretty...
I hate it when I go to people's service provider, any kind of service provider, and it's always, well, we're not even going to give you any idea. Just call us. And then because you get into it and then you find out, wait a minute, this isn't even close to what I can afford. Or, wow, this is much more. I would have asked for more. I think you have to give people some idea what they're looking at, and then they can self... regulate, you know, they can.
Well, they pick off the menu. Her menu description tonight, I can imagine as a marketer, really helps trigger ideas and thoughts and how you really have to use these services. And they are contact centers, not telemarketing anymore. Deborah, tell us a little bit more about Direct Marketing Partners. What are the typical programs you run and maybe the typical size and how people reach you et cetera?
Okay, well, there's nothing typical, so I'm just going to start off with that.
Okay.
We've got some campaigns that are pretty simple where we're going to go in and call on a very limited list and maybe come up with 5 leads. There's some small programs those are done often with partners and in conjunction with some other kinds of things that are going on, to very complex where we are the inbound inquiry center for some major companies dealing with high volumes of marketing automation inquiries that have to be qualified and are being put back into the customer's CRM, and just real heavy involvement. Where the customer also, and I think I said this at the beginning, sometimes we're asked to do things, the contact center is asked to supply services that you wouldn't associate with a telemarketing company.
Mm-hmm.
But just a few weeks ago, a customer asked us to please provide a database support or data support person on site here, that they were taking someone out of their team at headquarters, pushing that person up to do promoting that person to do another task. And rather than increase their headcount at headquarters, would we hire somebody here to do the function here? Anyway, so we get into some interesting things here.
How long does it take to set up an average contact center program, if there is such a thing as an average?
It varies. It can go anywhere from the time we get all the materials in hand, it can go from 2 or 3 days to 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, that's pretty quick, really.
Generally, it's pretty quick. Yeah.
Looking at some of your client lists here, Microsoft Corporation, NAVCO, Red River, Verizon Business. I'm just Hitachi Data Systems. I used to have them as a client. Datalink and Axway. You've got Avnet Computers. You've got some real winners here. I'm sure this is just part of the list. How would they reach you to talk about a program and what you might be able to do for them?
We've got our website,
mm-hmm.
www.directmarketingpartners.com, and on that you can hit the Contact Us button. My email is ddacosta, and that's ddacosta @dirmkt.com. And the phone number here is 800-909-2626. I'm extension 2002.
You're on the West Coast, but it makes no difference because I'm sure you've got clients all over. But you do have a sales presence in San Francisco, don't you? The San Francisco Bay Area, and you're also out there in the beautiful Sacramento, California.
Right, and we are U.S.-based, and the callers are all here under our roof in Sacramento. And as you say, we've got the salespeople in the Bay Area.
Oh, great. Well, I wish you lots of luck this year on the 50 most influential people in sales lead management. I've seen lots of votes coming in for you and for Tom.
Oh, good. Well, thank you.
She got my vote because she tackled the difficult and slippery question of pricing in a way that I got and I understood. And I appreciate that you were open and honest, and even though there were lots of caveats or
it's complicated.
It's complicated, yeah.
He did.
Well, he's run a West Coast marketing, so he's run marketing services companies,
yeah.
And so he knows when people are.
And they all, you go to these websites, and it's all wonderful and great, and then they pull you in, and then they want your information, somebody, and then you get way into this, and you're like, I wouldn't have even bothered to go this far had I known it was this, or that's what you did. I think you've got to at least be more upfront with people so that they can decide if this is really something they can afford or use or want or whatever.
Well, it's a growing field. When I was up at Sales 2.0 a few weeks ago, they were saying that hardly any outside salespeople are going to be hired the next 5 years. They were really? Yeah,
really?
They're really
wow.
thinking that they're going to be inside salespeople. And then in many cases, outsourcing of many of these jobs is going to come up, so it helps companies like Direct Marketing Partners.
Can I extend it one more minute here and just ask you the question I had? And maybe this is another touchy, explosive, long answer or something here, but why U.S.-based? I mean, when so many people are taking this stuff to the Philippines and India and everything else to do call centers, I appreciate that it's staying here. But is that an unusual thing that you guys keep everybody under your roof here in the U.S., where so many companies seem to outsource this overseas because it's cheaper?
Good question. As Jim explained, we do a lot of federal calling. We work with very major national corporations that would not allow it to be anything but U.S.-based and U.S. citizen.
Got it. Makes sense.
Background checks, et cetera, et cetera. And so many of our contracts require, and I was going to mention this, that one of the things that that a customer, when looking at telemarketing companies, if there are administrative requirements such as insurance thresholds or, you know, errors and omission insurance or background checks, you need to know if the call center is willing to comply with all of that or be able to provide all of that. So we have U.S.-based because, first of all, just because we want them here so that we can make sure we can watch them and help them, support them, the callers, correct them, all that. We want them here, and so obviously it's here in the U.S. Accents can be difficult.
I don't want to sound nativist, but I don't like it when I get people who I can barely understand trying to sell me something here. Drives me crazy.
Me too. They can barely understand me, much less me understand them.
Well, you got the Chicago accent.
Chicago accent. Yeah. Well, Deborah, you've been great today. Thank you so much for talking about the industry, which is growing, and talking about your own company, but also really letting us in kind of on the back room to understand all the nuances for putting up a contact center. And you've been very helpful today, and I'm sure many of our listeners will listen to your show. Will be up next week for everybody to hear.
This would be a good show to refer to people, like when he does his interim CEO stuff and everything here, or I still do a little bit of marketing here and there, to just send people and say, here's the range. Here's some ideas of what the complexities of what you're looking at. It isn't a 60-second answer. And that's okay, as long as I have some idea what we're facing here.
Great. Thank you very much. Deborah, say hello to everybody there for me that I might know. It's been a year or so since I've been up to Sacramento.
Do that. Thank you so much, gentlemen. It was fun. And,
thank you.
I'm glad that I got to do this.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Over to you, Paul. Let's wrap it up.
You've been listening to the SLMA Radio Hour, brought to you by our worldwide membership for sales lead management experts. If it has to do with sales lead generation or sales lead management, it starts here with the Sales Lead Management Association Radio Hour. For more information on our organization or to sign up for our free membership, just visit our website at theslma.com. That's THESLMA. This show is produced in part by James Obermeyer, Executive Director of the SLMA, and yours truly, Paul Roberts, on behalf of the OC Talk Radio Network.